I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Podsave the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Podsave the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Let's cross live to the United States, because we used to have a sort of Donald Trump tweet of the day moment, didn't we? Well, it's become a Donald Trump speech of the day moment. Simon Marks, our US correspondent, joins us. Donald Trump made a big speech in Arizona last night, made a lot of headlines, Simon.
He did indeed. Ian's speech of the day moments, I think we've got to be talking about today. Remember that just 24 hours ago, we were talking about that presidential address in which Donald Trump was reading from a teleprompter and unveiling his new Afghan strategy and acting quite presidential. Well, fast forward 24 hours to Phoenix, Arizona last night, and the crowd there and the television audience across the country was treated to a 70-minute untrammeled, raging diatribe by the President of the United States. He threatened to shut the government down unless Congress agrees to pay for the construction of that wall that he wants to build down along the border with Mexico. Remember, he used to say that Mexico was going to pay for the wall, but now he's threatening to shut the US government down if it doesn't at least advance the money to get the wall built. He threatened to tear up the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA. He excoriated both Republican senators from Arizona, the very state in which he was speaking, including Senator John McCain, who is currently battling brain cancer. He defended his handling of the neo-Nazi white supremacist protests in Charlottesville, Virginia, quoting selectively from statements that he made in the immediate aftermath of those neo-Nazi rallies. And he went on to say that the entire fault that is besetting him has been created by, guess who? The media.
If you want to discover the source of the division in our country, look no further than the fake news and the crooked media, which would rather get ratings and clicks than tell the truth.
Now, of course, we've heard Donald Trump say things like that before, but I don't think any of us had heard such a sustained rage by the President of the United States going on for an hour and 10 minutes. And it has taken the national conversation here to a new place. And the person transporting the national conversation to that new place is James Clapper. He used to be the Director of National Intelligence here in the United States. He served every president from John F. Kennedy all the way through to Barack Obama, and he went on CNN immediately after last night's presidential speech and said he'd never seen anything like it.
Just so objectionable on so many levels. I toiled in one capacity or another for every president since and including John F. Kennedy through President Obama, and I don't know when I've listened and watched something like this from a president that I found more disturbing.
And he went even further, suggesting that the country now needs to ask whether President Trump has the mental capacity necessary to serve in office and to have his finger on the nuclear trigger.
Having some understanding of the levers of power that are available to a president if he chooses to exercise them, I found this downright scary and disturbing.
That's an extraordinary thing for a former director of national intelligence who has served Republicans and Democrats alike before to go on television and say, and it has really opened the floodgates here for a discussion about whether President Trump is fit to continue serving as President of the United States.
Now, Simon, whenever you come on and we talk about Donald Trump, you and I are constantly assailed on Twitter and text. Let me read you out a couple here. Ian Dale, you're just a CNN stooge. It's partly because I now do a weekly show on CNN, I suppose. So I'm part of the fake news media. Alan in Belfast says, the truth hurts Simon Marks and the rest of the very dishonest people in the media. Now, this language that Donald Trump is using here, it will not go down well with people in the media and people on the sort of liberal side of politics, particularly in the United States. But there are a lot of people that support him as well, aren't there?
Well, he had a crowd there in Arizona that thinned during the course of his speech. We're all keeping a very close eye on opinion poll data that now shows that in some of the swing states that delivered him into the White House last November, his popularity is falling steadily, including popularity among some of his core supporters. And you only have to look at what his fellow Republicans are saying. It doesn't matter what the media says about Donald Trump. It doesn't matter what I say about Donald Trump or you say about Donald Trump, with the greatest respect to both of us. Look at what his fellow Republicans are saying. The New York Times reports today that Senator Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader of the US Senate, a man that Donald Trump needs if he's going to get his legislative agenda moving, Senator Mitch McConnell has now not spoken with President Trump for weeks. The last time they spoke, they exchanged an angry and profane tirade, and Senator McConnell is openly musing among his colleagues about whether the Trump presidency can be saved. If you look at what people like Mitch McConnell are saying, people like Stephen Bannon, who was in the White House until last Friday, had to say about the Afghanistan speech earlier in the year, he is now running the risk not just of losing the support of centrist Republicans up on Capitol Hill. Senator Bob Corker, very influential senator up there, was asked last week if he would support Donald Trump's renomination for the presidency in 2020, and that prominent Republican senator refused to answer the question. Donald Trump's problem is not with people like me, and it's not with people like you, it's with his fellow Republicans.
Now, just when we thought it was safe, Hillary Clinton is back in the news. She's got her memoirs coming out, or her account of the election campaign, and she's apparently been reading it to somebody, I believe.
She has indeed been reading a couple of excerpts from it. The book's called What Happened. In the interests of political balance, we can tell you that one of the excerpts that she's been reading, she said that standing in front of Donald Trump during one of those presidential debates, you'll remember that he was sort of walking up behind her in one of the presidential debates that we brought you live last year here on LBC, her skin began to crawl. She felt that she was being... He was very creepy, she says, during the course of that debate. Critics of the Clintons, of whom there are many within the Democratic Party, say that the problem with this book, What Happened, and the problem with the new political organisation that she's now backing, called Onward Together, is that she blames everybody else for her failure to win the US presidency, and she doesn't accept the fact that she was a lousy candidate who turned a lot of voters off. And there is a big debate that is still to be had within the Democratic Party over who is going to lead it into the presidential election in 2020, not just in terms of its presidential candidate, but actually, is it the Clintons that still dominate the Democratic Party, as Hillary Clinton would like to believe, or at some point will Barack and Michelle Obama return to the fray and say to Hillary Clinton, you know what, your time is over, it is now our time to control this party and our time to preside over the identification and support of a new, younger leader to go up against Donald Trump, Mike Pence, we don't know who, in 2020.
Well, I suppose if her skin crawled, she now knows how many women felt about Bill Clinton, doesn't she?
There will be those who say that one of Hillary Clinton's biggest difficulties on the campaign trail was connecting with women voters because of the memories that they have of Bill Clinton's time as president. And, you know, there are many Democrats that are deeply, deeply troubled by this book that Hillary Clinton has authored because she doesn't seem to understand, they argue, how much fault she had for losing an election that they believe she should easily have won.
Well, I really want that interview with Hillary Clinton, I can assure you. Simon,
I'll go and get it for you.
Thank you very much. That's Simon Marks, our US correspondent. Right.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.